Our scripture reading this morning comes from Genesis chapter 41. Then Pharaoh sent for Joseph, and he was hurriedly brought out of the dungeon. When he had shaved himself and changed his clothes, he came in before Pharaoh. And Pharaoh said to Joseph, "I've had a dream, and there is no one who can interpret it. I've heard it said of you that when you hear a dream, you can interpret it." And Joseph answered Pharaoh, "It is not I. God will give Pharaoh a favorable answer." And then Pharaoh said to Joseph, "In my dream, I was standing on the banks of the Nile, and seven cows, fat and sleek, came up out of the Nile and fed in the reed grass. Then seven other cows came up after them, poor, very ugly and thin. Never had I seen such ugly ones in all the land of Egypt. The thin and ugly cows ate up the first seven fat cows. But when they had eaten them, no one would have known they had done so, for they were still as ugly as before. Now I woke. I fell asleep a second time, and I saw in my dream seven ears of grain, full and good, growing on one stalk, and seven ears, withered, thin, and blighted by the east wind, sprouting after them. And the thin ears swallowed up the seven good ears. When I told it to the magicians, there was no one who could explain it to me." Well, then Joseph said to Pharaoh, "Pharaoh's dreams are one and the same. God has revealed to Pharaoh what he's about to do. The seven good cows are 7 years, and the seven good ears are 7 years. The dreams are one. The seven lean and ugly cows that came up after them are 7 years, as are the seven empty ears blighted by the east wind. They're 7 years of famine. It is as I told Pharaoh. God has shown to Pharaoh what he is about to do. There will come 7 years of great plenty throughout all the land of Egypt, and after them there will arise 7 years of famine. And all the plenty will be forgotten in the land of Egypt, and the famine will consume the land. The plenty will no longer be known in the land because of the famine that will follow, for it will be very grievous." And the doubling of Pharaoh's dream means the thing is fixed by God, and God will shortly bring it about. Well, now, therefore, let Pharaoh select a man who is discerning and wise, and set him over the land of Egypt. Let Pharaoh proceed to appoint overseers over the land and take 1/5 of the produce of the land of Egypt during the 7 plenteous years, and let them gather the food of these good years that are coming up and lay grain under the authority of Pharaoh for food in the cities, and let them keep it. That food shall be reserved for the land against the 7 years of famine that are to befall the land of Egypt, so that the land may not perish through the famine. The proposal pleased Pharaoh and all his servants. And Pharaoh said to his servants, "Can we find anyone else like this, one in whom the Spirit of God?" So Pharaoh said to Joseph, "Since God has shown you all this, there is no one so discerning and wise as you. You shall be over my house, and all of my people shall order themselves as you command. Only with regard to the throne will I be greater than you." And Pharaoh said to Joseph, "See, I have set you over the land of Egypt." And this is the word of God for us, the people of God.
Thank you, Conley. So our story begins, we're kind of covering three chapters in our story of Joseph, Genesis 37 through 50 this morning. And the story begins with Pharaoh pulling Joseph out of prison, out of this dungeon. So the question, of course, arises, why was he there? What happened? Last week, if you might remember from Pastor Ben's sermon, I was in the sanctuary preaching. We did a little swap. His brothers conspire to kill him, end up throwing him into this pit. And then when they pull him out of the pit, they sell him into slavery. He gets to Egypt. He's purchased by a man named Potiphar, and Potiphar puts Joseph in charge of his whole household as his head slave. And while he's there, Potiphar's wife makes a move on Joseph. She tries to seduce him. Joseph is young, he's handsome, he's probably a little bit vain, so we've been told. So she tries to seduce him. He resists her. She persists. He resists. Eventually, they're in the home one day alone. She grabs his cloak, the cloak, right? The theme of the cloak keeps returning, and says, lay with me. And he says no, and he bolts so quickly that he runs out of his clothes. And is left. She's left holding his cloak. She's maybe embarrassed. She's upset. She sounds the alarm, and she accuses Joseph of assaulting her. And Potiphar believes his wife and throws Joseph in prison. And that's where he is, in this dungeon. Next chapter. While he's there, we also learn that the Pharaoh's cupbearer, his butler, and his chief baker are also, they offend Pharaoh. They're thrown into this same dungeon. We're told that the Lord is with Joseph, so he ends up taking care of all of the prisoners. He's like the lead prisoner, works for the warden kind of thing. And while he's there, this cupbearer and this baker have these unsettling dreams. And we know from our first week that Joseph has familiarity with dreams. And he, in an attempt to try and help them, he's like, tell me their dreams, I can help you interpret them. And the cupbearer lays out his dream, which essentially means that in 3 days, he's going to be released from prison, and he's going to be reinstated in his role. And Joseph says, hey, just remember me, mention my name to Pharaoh. Then the baker tells him his dream. His dream's a little bit darker. I'm not going to get into it. A little darker. The meaning, Joseph tells him, is that in 3 days, you're going to be executed. You will not be reinstated to your role. And they're like, great. 3 days go by. It plays out exactly as Joseph has told them. The cupbearer is reinstated to his role. The baker is hanged. And Joseph is right. And then we're told that the cupbearer forgets Joseph. And doesn't mention his name to Pharaoh. And there he remains for 2 years. There he remains in prison, in this dungeon. And that's where our story begins. And I think it's interesting. There's something interesting about the way in which Joseph asks the cupbearer to remember him. We know that he's arrogant, a little bit vain. We remember this from his interactions with his brothers early on, right? He's flaunting the coat. He's kind of, not so compassionate in how he's sharing these dreams about how his brothers are going to bow to him. He's brothering them. I get it, right? I've had this weird dream where I'm better than you. Can you help me figure out what it means, right? He's flaunting it a little bit, right? He's 17. And he's confident. He's a confident young man. Maybe too confident. Like, listen to how he asks the cupbearer to remember him. Genesis, this is in chapter 40. 2 verses. But remember me when it is well with you. Please do me the kindness to make mention of me to Pharaoh. And so get me out of this place. For in fact, I was stolen out of the land of the Hebrews, and here I have done nothing that they should have put me in the dungeon. 2 verses, and the words me or I are used 7 times. When something happens 7 times in the Bible, you pay attention to it. It probably means something. It's probably not an accident. This is self-promotion to the max. There's no mention of God. There's only mention of Joseph, right? And how does the cupbearer respond to Joseph's request? He forgets. His resume has lost in the stack. Years ago, I played a show with one of my musical heroes. This was back in my musician days. I won't reveal his name. He's really big in Texas, but I will tell you he has 40,000 listeners on Spotify a month, okay? So he's not super famous, but he's got a following, right? His lead guitarist got sick. He got his number from a friend. He called me. He's like, I have a show tonight. I need help. Can you fill in? I'm like, absolutely. This is my dream, right? Just tell me when and where. Do you need coffee? Do you have any food allergies, right? I'm there. I'm excited. And so what I decided to do, and it's so cringy, I'm going to tell you the story. I had recorded a record not long before, and the CDs had just come in. CDs are called compact discs, kids. I hate that I have to explain this now. We used to carry them around in little binders, and we'd put them in our cars. And if you were rich, you had a 6-CD changer, right? And you didn't have to, like, change them out all the time. Now I collect vinyl, which is even older than CDs. We're going backwards. But I had my CD, and I decided, this is my shot. I got to give him my CD, right? So I play the show, and I have my CD in my back pocket the whole time. I had a jewel case on this CD. Jewel cases, for those of you that remember, not a little cumbersome, not, you know, not the most wieldy form of media, little sharp edges, easy to crack, and had this in my back pocket the whole night, the whole show, and I'm like trying to figure out when I can give this to him and not look like a total dweeb. And the answer is there's no time. So we play the show, we finish up, we're loading out our gear at the end of the night, we're in the parking lot. We have our guitars in our hands. We're getting, you know, he's loading his stuff into his Tahoe. And I'm like, this is it. This is my moment. I got to do it. You know, find some courage. I say, hey man, I'm lame. I recorded this record. I would love for you to listen to it and tell me if it's any good, right? And I lay it out there like, I'm not expecting anything from you. But internally, I'm like, I better keep my phone on tonight. I'm probably going to get a call from him asking me to go on tour with him forever. And be his opening act, and we're going to ride off into the sunset together on his tour bus, right? So he's like, you know, he's so kind about it. He receives it so beautifully. He's like, oh my gosh, you know, I can't wait to listen to it. He sets it on the bumper of his Tahoe. We're having this conversation. His eyes are locked with me. He's loading in gear, and this is before the button on the trunk doors. And he goes to shut his Tahoe door, and as he does, my CD gets wedged in between his bumper and trunk door and completely shatters. He has no idea. He doesn't see this happen. It's behind him. He's talking with me. I don't know. It's an act of God that he didn't hear it happen. You could hear my dreams being crunched. He walks around the Tahoe. The CD is just wedged in the back, broken in half. Walks around to the front of his Tahoe. He gets in, starts up his car. I'm thinking, do I say anything about this? Do I just let it ride? It was so cringy already to even give it to him. Like, is it going to be even more awkward? I decide, I got to say something. Because he tells me, windows down, fires up the truck. Thanks for the CD. Thanks for bailing me out. Thanks for the CD. I can't wait to listen to it. I'm going to listen to it right now. And I'm like, ooh. And I kind of chuckle to myself, and I'm like, it's going to be tough. And he's like, what'd you say? He's like backing up in the parking lot. He's like, huh? I'm like, it's going to be tough to listen to because it's wedged between your bumper and your trunk door. And I laugh about it. He's mortified. He gets out, does the whole, you know, act of, oh my gosh, I can't believe it. Do you have another copy on you? Of course I don't have another copy on me. I have no copy. I have nothing to give him. True story, I never hear from him again. That's the end of the story. I wish I could tell you I heard from him again. I still have his number in my phone. Every now and again, I'll just throw a text out there into the void, into the black hole. No response. It's been 15 years, so I'll let you know if anything bounces back. But this is a true story. This happened to me. I did this to myself, and I wish that I hadn't because it's so cringy. It's so self-promo-y, right? But this is the water that I was swimming in as a musician. If you want to make it music, you have to get yourself out there, right? You have to put yourself on a stage, right? You have to build the brand, create awareness, make an influence, right? Leverage social media. I think we understand this, all of us to some degree, when we are looking for jobs, right? About our resumes, right? Our LinkedIns, which are all about our experiences and our education and my skills and my references, numbers you can call for people who will talk about me, right? It's very self-promo. We all sound a little bit like Joseph in this moment, asking the cupbearer to remember us, right? How could the cupbearer forget Joseph? After what he did, how could my musical hero forget that my CD was on his bumper? 2 years go by for Joseph. And he's in prison. And I think that God uses this time to shape Joseph, to mature Joseph. They say that prison changes a person, and it really does change Joseph. And I want to be clear, I don't think that God causes this for Joseph. We're not told that in the text, but I do think that God uses this time. Pharaoh has these dreams about famine, which are really more nightmares. He calls in the magicians and the wise men. They can't interpret them. And in this moment, the cupbearer remembers and says, oh my gosh, I completely forgot. There's this kid, this young Hebrew slave in the prison. And I had this dream about when I made you mad and you threw me in prison. And he helped me interpret it. And here I am. You got to call this guy. And he calls him up. Joseph gets called up to the big leagues. He puts on a new coat. The coat is back, right? Showers up, shaven, shows up to Pharaoh, says, you know, what can I do you for? And I want you to listen to what Pharaoh says in the message here. I dreamed a dream, Pharaoh told Joseph. Nobody can interpret it, but I've heard that just by hearing a dream, you can interpret it. Joseph answered, not I, but God. God will set Pharaoh's mind at ease. Joseph's language is completely 180'd. It was me, 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 Elle Woods, when she finds out about Harvard. Me! I love that moment, right? But now it's God. This is not something I can do, but something God can do. And Joseph goes on and on. God will give Pharaoh a favorable answer. God has revealed to Pharaoh what he's about to do. The doubling of Pharaoh's dreams means that things are fixed by God, and God will shortly bring about it. It's a major moment in this story, the first time in the story where Joseph is aware that his future, the future, is in God's hands. Right? The giver of dreams, even the giver of his dreams, the giver of Pharaoh's dreams is at work. And Pharaoh asks for an interpretation. Joseph gives it to him, but he doesn't stop there. He continues with this proposal, this plan, right? Now, therefore, let Pharaoh select a man who's discerning and wise and set him over the land of Egypt and have him hold back a fifth of the land in the years of plenty, so in the years of famine we'll have food to eat. And Walter Brueggemann writes of this moment that Joseph's concrete proposal is without guile. There's no hint that Joseph refers to himself, though the narrator knows where the story will go. And I think if this were us in this moment, we'd say, here's the problem. You've got a serious problem on your hands, but I got good news for you. I'm here, and I'm the solution. And for the low price of $150,000 a year, I'm going to fix this problem for you, right? We would be leveraging that. Hire us, right? Here's my resume, right? I'm the man for the job. Listen to my CD. Endorse my skills on LinkedIn. I see you. I see you doing it. I do it too. It's cringy. It's cringy, right? But not Joseph. Joseph is cool, calm, and collected in this moment. Joseph is not talking about Joseph. He's talking about God. And Pharaoh, in this moment, is pleased with Joseph. And he says to his servants, he turns around and he says, can we find anyone like this? Anyone who is in whom the Spirit of God is in and dwelling? And then he says to Joseph, since God has shown you all of this, there is no one discerning and wise as you. I was talking to Ben earlier this week, Pastor Ben, about this, and I said, you know, I circled these seven things, you know, the me's and the I's, and I said, this is really interesting. You need to look at this. And he texted back, and he said, I think it's awesome that Joseph gets Pharaoh, who thinks he's a god, lowercase g, to talk about God, uppercase. That's great, right? I told him I was going to use that and not quote him. But because it's a sermon on humility, there it is. I thought that was beautiful, right? He tricks him into thinking about God. Or maybe it's not even a trick. Maybe it's just the consequence of humility. Maybe it's just a byproduct of humility, when there is less of us and more of God. Joseph has been humbled. I mean, how can he not be, right? From the pit, the cistern, to slavery, to the accusation, to prison, to maybe him thinking he's getting out of prison, to 2 more years in prison. How could he not be humbled? And in this moment, paradoxically, he's elevated. Pharaoh appoints him over all of Egypt, and he decks him out with Egyptian royalty. The coat of many colors that was stolen by his brothers is now replaced with fine Egyptian linen cloth. And he's given the signet ring of Pharaoh, meaning he can sign documents as Pharaoh, power of attorney. He's given a golden chain. He's given the company car, company chariot, really. And when he rides around, everyone bends the knee to him. He's even given an Egyptian wife, which is important because it legitimizes, this woman is of Egyptian nobility, it legitimizes him. And he's given an Egyptian name, a new name, which is Zaphnath-Paneah, which means God speaks, he lives. So now, when Egyptians say Joseph's name, they say something about God, the Hebrew God. And even though Joseph is now Egyptian royalty, the true test of his loyalty lies with the Israelite God. We hear who we think to be Jesus, the coming Messiah described in Isaiah chapter 11 by the prophet. Listen to how this could also describe Joseph in this moment. The spirit of the Lord will rest on him. Something Pharaoh just said about Joseph. The spirit of wisdom and of understanding, the spirit of counsel and might, the spirit of knowledge and fear of the Lord, and he will delight in the fear of the Lord. There's a quote that's attributed to C.S. Lewis. It's actually from Rick Warren that I love, and it's that humility is not thinking less of yourself, it's thinking of yourself less. And I think that Joseph is thinking of himself less because he's thinking more about God. Humility is knowing that the future is in God's hand, and it's knowing that where we stand in the light of God, God is the giver of dreams. And we are dust. From dust we come and shall return, as we say at the beginning of Lent, as it says in the beginning of the Bible. But God is the God that can breathe life into dust, into the Adam, into Adam. God didn't forget my CD and crush my dreams and my spirit. God didn't cause the cupbearer to forget Joseph, leaving him in prison for 2 more years. I think that God used that to humble me. It is hilarious and taught me something about, hey, maybe don't be a dweeb and like pass your CD out like Skittles, right? I think that God used that to humble Joseph and teach him something. But here's the real paradox of Christianity. Here's the real paradox of our faith. Even God humbles himself in Jesus. Paul puts it this way, Philippians chapter 2, something known as the Christ hymn. And being found in appearance as a human being, he humbled himself and became obedient to the point of death, even death on a cross. Therefore, God exalted him even more highly and gave him the name that is above every name, so that at the name given to Jesus, every knee should bend in heaven and on earth and under earth, and every tongue should confess that Jesus Christ is Lord, to the glory of God the Father. It's a journey, but Joseph knows that the destination is not about Joseph. It's about God. May we be humbled, so that God can be glorified, so that God has room to work in us. Because friends, it's not about us, and it never was. Amen.